Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for May 17th, a political week which just really ramped up over the weekend. We're here with you again, Catherine. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for tonight.
Oh, sure. And Tim, welcome. Even though I understand you may not be at the top of your game due to some rest issues, but a joyous occasion that is.
Oh, yes, sir, it is. This morning at 4:57 a.m., my newest grandson, Bruce, joined us, and it's a good day, David.
Oh, I bet it was. Well, I still see you've had a chance to follow a little politics that just seems to keep breaking every minute. Tonight we will have Martha Zoller as our special guest here in just a bit, but we'll talk a little Georgia politics until then to kind of lead into that. And the first thing is John Oxendine. He, we talked about the not maybe above board contributions. You know, they didn't look very wholesome, if you will. He says they're not illegal. And then his first defense was, well, if the AJC's attacking me, that's a good thing. But then by the end of the week, he had given $175,000 back in contributions. I have a number right. Catherine, what's your first thought on that?
A dollar late and a dollar short, a day late and a dollar short.
Yeah.
Not
I mean,
really.
If he could have gotten away with it, we know he would have.
Right.
That's the way he operates. Tim?
Well, I hate to tell him, but whether or not he says these donations comply with the law, It's about the perception of the thing, too. And seems like that was kind of a hot-button issue at the state GOP convention this weekend, too. So it ain't just going to be Democrats talking about this. His Republican opponents are going to come at him with this hot and heavy. And I think he may be in a little bit of trouble now, David. I really do.
I agree.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to win the thing. I mean, and there are, you know, a certain amount of Republican voters who are, you know, oh, we just want good government, we want the honest candidate, whatever it may be, especially when ideologically there's not a lot of space separating these folks. Things like electability and above boardness are going to play even heavier.
And what about conflicts of interest? How's it going to get around that one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of Republican voters out there that have had their insurance bills go up, and they're probably not as big a friends of the insurance industry as John Oxendine may believe. You know?
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's roof gets torn up by hail, and they didn't get the money they thought they would to fix their roof. You know, they're not going to want to hear a bunch of contributions for the insurance industry that may have been on the sleazy side.
Well, guys, when 40% of the money you've gotten for your campaign is coming from people that you regulate, isn't that a conflict of interest?
Well, you know, I've talked to other candidates about this, and those kind of contributions have been not unaccepted in other races. But my question is, if that's the case, then how can the governor accept money from anyone? Or how can the labor commissioner, for example, take contributions from anyone who has employees? You know, I mean, if you're going to talk about conflict of interest, you're really going to stop at any contributions. And it's very interesting how you can segment. Oh, well, the insurance commissioner can't take it, Well, why couldn't the governor? How can the governor? Do you see what I mean?
I guess I can jump in and answer a little bit of that.
Okay.
I'm a teacher. Let's say, you know, I'm going to influence things. I'm going to give. I'm going to max out. I'm going to give $2,000 to. You know, we'll just say Kathy Cox. You know, running for re-election. Oh yeah, because I'm going to get a big raise. Well, I give $2,000 and then I get a 2% raise this year. I'm probably not going to get a quarter of what I gave in a donation for my raise. So therefore, I can't impact my salary, my bottom line, the same way in industry like education. Same thing with labor commissioner. I see what you're saying, but then if I own a big insurance company, if I'm Mr. Independent, you know, State Farm or Allstate agent, you know, I can't, you know, make as much money, but, you know, one of the bigger, you know, groups that, like, own State Mutual, which was involved, you know, they can, you know, reap hundreds of thousands, millions even, in profits by some decisions.
Okay,
that's probably the difference.
That's a very, very understandable difference.
It's all in the number of zeros.
And David, you just mentioned that about the two Rome insurance companies up here that are both owned by D. Yancey. They sent $120,000 to John Oxendine's campaign, but they did it through like 10 PACs over in Alabama. Well, if all of this is so above the board and so good, then why all the cloak and dagger stuff?
Exactly. That's the thing that I think if it's talked up will be the revealing factor. I think that's the thing that makes it all so questionable.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell something's definitely not right the way they've played it. So by, you know, going out of state in the way they have, but you know. It'd be interesting to see. I'm sure that, Tim, you were alluding to the Republican convention in Savannah, you know, what was said there, what happened. And the next kind of thing I want to segue into is the coverage of those two events, our two events, political events. I noticed that during the weekend there was this open thread about the convention, and people began to post, you know, their opinions on Sunday drinking laws, their opinions on different people, you know, just in some other way, just about, you know, other posters on the board. And then I contrast that onto Blog for Democracy, the coverage Artura Atlanta had planned for the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner. And there he kind of gave constant updates of what was going on, put in pictures. I noticed such a difference in the coverage. Did y'all kind of look at those links and see that, Tim?
Catherine, I do want to say kudos to Blog for Democracy. All of those great pictures and stuff from the State JJ dinner, it was just terrific. It was almost like I was there myself. And to be honest, David, all I gathered about the GOP convention was that they were worried that they needed to drink all the liquor before Sunday. Other than that, I didn't get a whole lot out of them.
That's kind of what I'm saying. Catherine, what did you see on those two?
Well, I agree, and Ataro Atlanta is really good at covering those things. He's very even-handed, and, you know, I know him personally, and I know that he is very careful to not include his own personal biases, aside from a few snarky remarks. And I think that it's really helpful for those of us who couldn't attend, to see how good the event turned out, and to, you know, sort of bring some of the inspiration that occurs at those events right down to the screen, and I think that's really good. I only read a little bit of the coverage of that Peach Pundit did, and I they're just so mean over there.
and I will say this: when I sent y'all that earlier in the day, I did, and that was throughout the weekend. I did notice that, you know, somewhere mid-afternoon, Buzz Brockway did put up a set of pictures with a general recap of the event on Peach Pundit. So he actually, I guess, maybe saw what we saw and said, look, we need something that's real coverage, and I will give him kudos. He did something that was more substantial. And I will say this, a lot of his pictures were from a bar event, not the actual convention. I don't know, because apparently there was something about not bringing cameras to do flash photography. When did they start, treating it like
why did the AJC have this big picture on their side of Michael Steele addressing the convention?
Well, journalist credentials took precedence. I would hope you'd want to get press coverage. I think we have our guest ready. Ms. Zala, are you here with us?
I am, David. How are you?
Oh, doing good. You're on here with Tim and Catherine. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
We're not doing your show.
It's been a long weekend.
Yes. Now, were you at the GOP convention in Savannah?
I was on Friday. Well, actually, Friday morning I was in New York doing Fox and Friends, and then I flew down to Savannah and was there Friday night and Saturday morning, and then headed on back. So it's been a busy weekend.
Well, we'd asked to see your pictures, but we don't want to get you in trouble. Tell us, since you're there, I mean, what's the deal with, like, no flash photography? It sounds like they don't want a lot of photos of the event.
No, I think it's the flash part of it, because it really does throw people off. And I did notice, I mean, I've had an opportunity to speak with Chairman Steele for a few minutes, and plenty of people were taking pictures of him in the back of the room once he was done speaking. In fact, he stood and waited until every last person had shook his hand and had taken pictures and all that stuff. I think that, and I can tell you from giving speeches, it's very distracting when you're standing up at a podium and flashes are going off. So that could be it.
Oh, okay, because they made this just a big point of it on some of the blogs. We just were curious of it.
Well, as with the blog folks, they like to focus in on minute details.
Well, we just didn't see as many photos of the event as we did, like, say, the Jefferson-Jackson Day dinner. That happened during the weekend. You know, you would think the convention of the Republicans during a weekend, they'd want to get more,
There were plenty of pictures taken, so I don't know where, and there were plenty of opportunities to take pictures with people. I did not get the feeling that they did not want pictures taken. In fact, I was up at the podium before everything started chatting with Randy Evans, and, he was calling people that had camera, hey, take a picture of me with this person, take a picture of me with this person. I think that it really is about that during the event, while people are speaking, you take pictures and, you can really throw people off.
Oh, okay. Well, one thing we hadn't got into on the show, but it seems like a good time to start since you were there and you could tell us how it was received. We just got to see the Karen Handel video online that was shown before her speech. What did you think of it, and how was it received by the general audience?
Well, it depends on what you thought about Karen Handel, but I will tell you, it certainly was the talk. I mean, people were talking. The only person people were talking about after the candidates gave their speeches with Karen Handel. Now, whether it will stick with her in the long run, I don't know. But she, by doing that, there were some people gasping. some people couldn't believe it. I thought it was pretty clever, quite frankly, and it set her apart. She also set herself apart from Governor Perdue, who, she does have a lot of people on his staff. And, of course, you're going to see a lot of his campaign people on all of these campaigns. I mean, being that he was the first Republican governor to be elected in 134 years, the people that helped him get elected are in hot demand among other Republican candidates, so that's to be expected. But it's interesting to see his team working for different candidates, because they'll be working against each other now. But I think that all in all, it's going to help her, because people are continuing to talk about it. But it is still 48 weeks to qualification, and if we've learned anything from this election, is that things can change.
Yes, now there were two attacks in a way in that video, and one was pretty, just kind of a little soft needle with John Oxendine, where she didn't even actually mention him by name, just showed an ox. And then the other one was bringing back up the rat video. Now, when the rat video was used, Sonny Perdue was a very much underfunded challenger. But if the rat video begins to get used against Roy Barnes as a challenger himself in a party that's not in power, does it almost make him become a more sympathetic figure, in your opinion?
Well, I think it could, but you don't have to worry about that in a primary. In a primary, taking start you taking pot shots at each other, and, you know, maybe you got to worry about who you might be up against in the fall. But if you don't make it through the primary, and as you know, primaries are a lot more caustic. You know, people that have been killing each other during primaries become buddies afterwards. And so I think primaries are just the nature of it. But it clearly, you know, and she had that, you could tell that she did most of the work on this, or her campaign did most of the work on this before Nathan Deal announced, because all there was about Nathan Deal in there was sort of a silhouette of his, you know, of him in there just as being one of the boys, so to speak. So I think you, enacting the rat video, I mean the rat image, the purpose of that was Roy Barnes, but it was always to remind people of, also to remind people of what you just said, because Karen is the underfunded candidate at this point in time. And it's to remind people that another guy that was underfunded ended up winning.
Okay, and you answered a question. We were trying to figure out who the silhouettes were. We were thinking maybe we can figure out Thurbert Baker, maybe we can figure out others before we came on the air. Well, like I said, Catherine Smith and Tim Shiflett are on with me. I want to let them ask some questions about the convention before we move to our next topic. Catherine?
Sure.
Hi, Martha. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's a real pleasure to have you on. How well attended was the convention, and was it mostly, you know, sort of the well-placed Republicans, or was it a pretty wide range of attendees?
Well, there was certainly the theme of the event was diversity. They you know, the Republican Party of Georgia went out of their way to highlight the not only people of color, but young people and that sort of thing. And there was a big Michael Steele actually spent a lot of time talking directly to young Republicans, college Republicans, and teen Republicans, and about what their role should be in growing the party. So I thought that was positive. In my own home county of Hall County, only 14 of the 54 delegates came, but that did not appear to be typical of the other counties. And there were a lot of guests, which I thought was interesting. And there were, you know, almost all the guest chairs were filled, which again I thought was interesting. I think it was well attended. I think that it was energetic. The governor was received very positively, even though this crowd was not happy with him vetoing the tax cut bill last week, the Tom Graves tax cut bill. I mean, there was a lot of mumbling about that, and the number one sticker to have was real conservatives don't veto tax cuts, and that was the number one sticker, you know, that people mm-hmm. wanted. You know, everybody's giving you stickers when you go to these things, but that's the one everybody wanted and everybody had on, and everybody knew who they were talking about, you know, with that sticker. But the governor was received with a standing ovation coming in and going out. And I think that, you know, that even though there's a lot of people that don't think he has been as conservative a governor as they would have hoped he would have been, he still is, you know, a governor that won and won re-election. So,
Tim, I don't have anything else. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. The AJC reported that one noticeable no-show at the state GOP convention was Superintendent Kathy Cox. Is there anything really to be read into that?
You know, I noticed that also, and when you figure you're over an organization that has, you know, half of the state budget going to it, that you would be at the convention. But I think that she really does not want to be questioned. She is really not somebody that wants to get out there and meet with people. I think she's made huge mistakes as far as her accessibility to the public, and especially to people who are on her side. She's very difficult to get. I mean, I recall, you know, Governor Barnes was sort of that way too, that even among people that were on his side, he was hard to get to. And I don't think that serves any candidate or elected official well. So, yes, she was missing. There was a lot, you know, in the 9th Congressional District, but neither Mike Evans or Bill Stevens was there. Bill had a funeral to go to, but Mike Evans was not there, although there was literature there. So you do notice the people that weren't there, for sure.
Okay, thank you, David.
Well, and you kind of bring us to our next topic, the 9th Congressional District. It's the only known vacant congressional seat we're going to have. First question we just got to ask, since people mentioned it on the Internet and I believe on the Georgia Gang, about you possibly running for that seat. What could you tell us?
Well, I haven't ruled it out. I am considering it for, you know, like I've told many people, and I haven't made a decision yet, and it'll probably be later this year before I make a final decision. My sister and my mother have been both in the last few months diagnosed with cancer, and so it's really, you know, if a year ago if this had happened, it would have been I would probably be telling you tonight that I'm running for the seat. But my, you know, I have other priorities right now, and, you know, so I haven't made my mind up, but it's not as likely as it was a year ago. Now, I know that sounds like a politician's answer, but that's as truthful as I can be. But I think that the people that are going to be out there is you've got a Tom Graves, Representative Tom Graves from Ranger. He's in the western side of the district. He is not announced yet, but I suspect that he will. Mike Evans has already gotten in there, but I think it looks a little bit like I've just got to run for something. That's just my opinion on that. But I think it's too close to the blow up around Gina Abrams Evans to really for him to be able to get any traction. Bill Stevens is somebody that has been successful before within the Republican Party. He's been out of it for a while. He's a little more liberal than some of the other people in there, and this is a very Republican, very conservative district. I kind of call the 9th district the mirror image of the 5th district, you know, that the 5th district is so heavily Democrat that it would be almost impossible for a Republican to ever win that district. Well, the 9th district is sort of the mirror image of that district. So there are those people in there. State Senator Lee Hawkins is considering it. I know that he has been thinking about it very strongly. I saw him at the convention with Mark Roundtree from Landmark Communications, and that is the guy that does his political stuff for him for his Senate races. And I have not heard of any Democrats that are thinking about it, but I suspect as in the last couple of elections that a Democrat will come out and want to run for it. Now, I had heard some talk about a couple of people from Dalton County Commission thinking about it, but I haven't seen any more about that. Now, I'm heading up to the western side of the district this Thursday night to give a speech to the Union County, kind of the northwest side, the Union County Republican Party, so I'll get a little more of a feel for how that side of the district is weighing on this.
Yes, well, and that kind of brings up another question on that. And by the way, I thought your answer was kind of refreshingly direct, telling your thought process. And speaking of a Democrat, since we know about this, we know Jeff Scott ran last time, but he's running for state school superintendent, which probably is a better fit given his educational background, so that would take one Democrat out of play. But you're talking about the east and west halves of the district, and some rumors I know we've heard, and you may have heard the same ones, that if when the next census we gain certainly 2 seats and maybe just even 1 seat, there's going to be a move to take the western half of the 9th and the northern portion of the 11th and make a northwest Georgia district. Is that affecting people's decisions in any way?
It is because, you know, I think definitely we'll have 1 seat and it would have to go in North Georgia somewhere, you know, the extra, because that's where the growth in population is. There could be 2 seats, and those would probably come out of, you know, these northeastern states. That's where typically about 15 seats every census have been moving from the northeast and midwest into the southeast and southwest. So that's just been a trend that's happened for the last several censuses. And I think that, that could possibly happen, and it is playing into people's decisions. I mean, I have heard a couple of the people that we've named here say, you know what, you know, maybe I'll wait until it's a completely open seat. Maybe I'll take a look at that there because, you know, the ridiculousness, and I'm kind of hoping that the economy will also affect political campaigns because they have gotten to the point where average folks cannot run. I mean, one of the biggest stumbling blocks for me or anybody else that might want to run for office, if you've got to raise $1 million for a primary, for a job that, you know, pays $190,000, Or let's look at a state senate or a state house race where you might have to raise $500,000 for a job that pays $17,000 a year. How do you raise that kind of money and not owe people things? And I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, that's a question that you have to sit down, look in the mirror, and say, okay, what am I willing to do, what's right to do, and how am I going to raise that kind of money from people and not have them expect you to do things their way? It's a tough question.
It is a tough question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we pass it to Catherine, you know, people run for office for their obituary, not their checkbook.
I mean, yeah.
Nobody's motivated by the money you're going to make.
No, but you know, let's be honest here. It is in the state Senate, in the state House, in the House of Representatives, the Senate. You know, the Senate, I mean, you know, there's the wealthiest, you know, group of people just about in the wealthiest 100 people in America. Not totally, but, I mean, most all of those folks do very well. And there is, you know, there are a lot of things that come your way as a result of being in government. That's not the right thing. But, look, Tom Daschle was just hired this week by GE to help them shepherd through all, you know, all of the things that have been going on with them. And, you know, some people on my side have been criticizing GE. I'm not one of those people because they hired Tom Daschle because we have Democrats in control. If Republicans were in control, they'd be hiring Trent Lott, okay? So that's just the way it works.
Yeah, Catherine, any questions on the ninth?
Well, I don't have any questions on the ninth, but I would like to talk a little bit about this financial side of these elections. I agree with you 100%. I think that the buy-in to run as a candidate in any of these elections, I mean, it even goes down to local city elections. It's a very expensive undertaking, and that's how we build our bench in both parties, is to get, you know, young people involved and elected at all different levels so that they can move forward and move up into the higher levels of government. But, you know, seriously, how do we accomplish something like that? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I personally believe in not having any limits on giving, but that everything has to be claimed in your own name, meaning you can't get together with 10 other people and call yourself, you know, Americans for Progress. Or I'm making that up. There might be a group called Americans for Progress, but I'm just saying you can't get together and then be a PAC giving a bunch of money to people. I think that it ought to be individuals, that if you give money, it's the same as speech. I agree that giving money is the same as speech, but there has to be complete disclosure of who gave how much. And we don't have that right now. I mean, President Bush did it in 2000. He was one of the first people to turn around and put checks on the Internet so that people could look that up. Sonny Perdue did that also. Now it's pretty much standard practice that kind of stuff is revealed. However, when you go and you look at those lists, it's not just people's names. It's a lot of groups that give money. And I'm not opposed to people getting together for a certain cause. See, what I'm afraid of is, just like with campaign finance reform, it has made it harder for regular folks to run for office instead, because the rich folks, and I don't mean rich in a negative way, but people that have money they're going to put in politics, they'll find a way to get around the rules if they've got it. For average folks, we're not going to be able to find a way to get around it. I worry that if we go too hard on saying lobbying is bad, that we're going to actually make it harder for regular folks to get together and talk to their elected officials. So, you know, because it's always the little guy with a little bit of influence that gets limited when you do stuff like that. It's never the big guy. And there are big guys, you know, I use the example of Trent Lott and Tom Daschle a few minutes ago, because they're kind of, like I said, mirror images. They're mirror images of each other. They're both making multi-million dollars a year lobbying, peddling their influence that they had in the United States Senate. One's a Democrat and one's a Republican, but they're both doing it. And most of these guys, given the opportunity, are going to do it.
Yes, Tim, any questions on the 9th District?
Yes, ma'am. You live at Gainesville, and I'm 120 miles away from you, 5 miles from the 9th District myself. That's how big this district is. My state senator is one of the state Republican Party leaders, Senator Mullis, and he lives in the 9th District. Has there been anything that you've heard at all about what he might be thinking about doing in connection with this?
I have, and I have heard that he's one of those people that are thinking about waiting, that are thinking about waiting till 2012 when he can have some influence on how those lines are going to be drawn when they add the seat. So, yes, I have heard. I haven't heard anything about him for 2010, but I have heard from a number of sources that he might be one of those people that would be waiting till 2012.
So you think he may be looking at the possibility of the new Northwest Georgia district?
Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you, David.
Okay, well, Ms. Ollie, you've been most generous with your time. Loved having you on, and you're welcome anytime on the Kudzu Vine, whether you're candidate or not.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you later on this week on the Martha Zala Show.
Be super. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that was great having her. It's always good to get, you know, different voices because all three of us are, you know, Yellow Dog Democrats and proud of it. But, you know, we know that, you know, we're not every voter in Georgia, and different people have different, obviously not given our latest results. But, you know, it's good to get other opinions. So,
David, when you talk to her again, ask her one question that I wanted to ask her and forgot to ask her. I would like to know which she enjoys doing better, television or radio. You know she's all over both of them.
Well, Tim, I will tell you that now. As a lot of y'all know, I've been coming on her show weekly for a little while now as the resident Democrat. One, I don't know that I should become the questioner on her own radio show. But two, being that it is a radio show and she's got her radio sponsors, you got to know the answer she's going to give me on the radio show, Tim.
Right.
But what if we were on the set of the Georgia gang? What answer would she give?
It might be a little different. So, but yeah, I do correspond through email, and I might pass that little question off in that manner, since that's a neutral medium, I guess. Well, I guess we were talking about the Karen Handel video, and you and the three of us haven't given our opinions on it, and it was, you know, the big event of the convention. I guess somebody might say, oh, Michael Steele's speech, given that he's, you know, kind of one of the stars of the Republican Party being their chair. And people can actually name him, unlike that guy before. what was his name? I can't think of it. Okay, anyway, point proved. Anyway, but then this video came out. Catherine, what's your thought on the video?
Well, you know, I thought it was very effective. You know, technically, I thought it was very well produced and all that. I think it sort of sets her up for, you know, it's not quiet. You know, it's not here's me. This is how good I am. Let me talk about how good I am. It's more about, you know, I'm better than everybody, than these other people. And so I think it sort of sets her up to sort of be the fighter, which may be what she wants, but I think that's, you know, she's got a long road ahead of her, and I wonder if it might have been wiser to start out a little quieter.
Yeah, and I guess she had to do the video after the poll that showed that John Oxendine was the front runner before the scandal came up, because it would be interesting to see if the scandal alone would bring down his front runner status. And she mentioned something I didn't even think about. Nathan Deal could hardly be mentioned, although I really don't know where he stands in this race. Tim, your thought on the video?
Well, our guest, Martha Zoller, just said it perfectly. She was there. She saw the video. She saw how people reacted to it. I thought it was a very savvy political move. It was something different than what anybody else did at that convention. And as Martha Zoller said, what was everyone talking about afterward? Well, they were talking about that video and about Karen Handel. So it worked perfectly, didn't it, David?
Well, I guess she's following the, meaning Karen Handel, the Bonnie Raitt School of Politics. Let's give them something to talk about.
Yeah, we go.
Yeah, I mean, I know what that is, the buzz factor. I've gone to more than one point.
Bingo.
So they talked about the buzz factor.
Bingo.
So, I think, you know, the video was not meant for me. You know, I'm a Democrat. I'm probably not as big a fan of her, Karen Handel. So, therefore, but for who she is to work with and who she's aiming it to, it's good. It's like a well-made strawberry shortcake movie. I'm not a 4 or 5-year-old girl, and I don't care for strawberry shortcake. So, but I can still say, hey, it was well done for what you were going for.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's kind of the GOP convention, if you will. We've covered that thing pretty thoroughly. I think it's probably time to before we go to another state, let's go ahead and talk about the Atlanta mayor's race. There's a poll that came out done by Insider Advantage. I need to pull up both set of statistics. They actually had a Word document with the thing broken down, which to me that was part of the more interesting figures. It showed Mary Norwood ahead with a big lead over Lisa Borders, Kasim Reed, and Jesse Spikes. No one else was even listed as getting enough votes to register. Tim, what was your thought on that poll?
Wow. Undecideds at 43%. That led the way. Now, I know that Mary Norwood had a big lead, but undecideds at 43%, I'm not sure she has that big of a lead, though. I'm not. I think if she does, it's what Matt Towery said. It's based on name ID alone, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, name ID is a big factor in it. I mean, one that stood out to me is, you know, like the Hispanic vote. Jesse Spikes is ahead in the Hispanic vote, 28% to 0-0. I mean, that's kind of strange.
And he's drawing 2% overall.
Yeah, it was just some strange things in the poll. Catherine, what were your thoughts on the poll?
Well, I will actually say that someone in my household received the call.
Wow.
Wow.
Unusual, yeah. And it was a very, very quick, completely automated survey. I mean, it was like three questions. So I will say I wonder if it went a little deeper how different it might have been. But I think it's really about name recognition, and what surprised me was Senator Reed. I thought that he would be at least even with City Council President Lisa Border. So that kind of surprised me. I think that it was a very brief poll, and I just wonder if we need to see some more and some, you know, more sort of in-depth research before we can really conclude anything from it. But the undecideds are, you know, they tell the story, I think.
Yeah, well, I think you really see that, you know, Kasim Reed's never run citywide, and if you could segment this down, what are his numbers in the part of the city that's in his state senate district, and in that part, what does it look like?
Well, that's a good point.
I mean, that's something to look at. Also, one thing that did strike me is, if you look at this, the numbers for Democrats, Republicans, and Independents are virtually the same.
That's crazy.
I mean, Mary Norwood has a substantial lead among Democrats, among Republicans, and among Independents. The only place it does change is Lisa Borders and Kasim Reed are very close for second. Kasim Reed's like a tenth of a point ahead of Lisa Borders, and given what a good Democrat he is in the state Senate, it's hard to understand why he's so popular among, you know, hardcore self-identified Republicans, if you will. So therefore, if you're sitting here looking at this thing and you're going, well, how can all candidates be just the same to all people regardless of their political affiliations? Male-female divide. Kasim Reed runs a lot better among females than males. So does Jesse Spikes. Why? I mean, obviously the undecideds are higher, but it's just, It was just. I don't think this is the best poll we'll see of the Atlanta mayor.
David, you're looking at the cross tabs, I gather.
I am.
Are Mary Norwood's good numbers being driven largely by white voters?
No. Well, if you look at white voters, she leads among white and black voters. That's what I mean. There's no difference. Anything in age, there's not much difference. You know,
wait a minute. She leads in both white and African.
Yeah, she does better among white voters than black voters, but she leads in both categories. She has a 20-point lead in this poll among black voters.
That surprises me a great deal.
I just don't know. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, the only thing she doesn't lead, like I said, is Hispanics. Jesse Spikes is the candidate of Hispanics. I mean, there's just no other way you can tell. Based on this great poll where, you know, no Hispanic voter is voting for anybody besides Jesse Spikes, so they're undecided.
Well, the other I'm looking at the cross tabs now, and the other weird thing is that under other, Lisa's way ahead. Well, oh, there's only four people though. Okay, never mind.
And other, that's other candidates. Like, for instance,
no, that's other races under race.
Oh, other races. Yeah, she does better among Asians, maybe. What you say?
But there's only four counts in there, so that doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I say this in jest, because probably Hispanic out of 13 folks, it's like two people said Jesse Spikes. I mean, you looked at the number, it is 13. It's just, it is a very unusual poll, to say the least.
Is the race that fluid? I mean, that is an awfully, awfully high number of undecided. Is the race that fluid?
I think at this point the race is who's garnering endorsements, who's raising cash, who's getting their campaign team in place. The people that are doing that legwork now, it's like the duck. You're working under the water. The people that are doing all those things, that's better than a poll number at this point.
That's what I think.
Especially given this poll number. Now, if it was a different poll that maybe had the same results, but it had a little better methodology that wasn't so screwy with Democrats and Republicans thinking exactly alike, and, you know, Jesse Spikes, the only candidate that gets part of the racial, you know, voting and stuff like that, it might be, a little more to it.
We're surely looking at a runoff, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, looking at this poll, you'd have to think so. Yeah.
Mm.
There's so many other topics in so many other states, but Texas just stays interesting. The little report this week talking about when Kay Bailey Hutchinson may resign and what that'll mean. They're thinking she'll resign in fall after it would be on this November's ballot if she resigned earlier. So she's going to wait to resign after, so it'll be in a special election held, but then Rick Perry will get to name the person that will hold that seat until then, the person she's running against for Texas governor. What a strange dynamic. Tim, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I've actually been reading about this a great deal. The Hedgehog Report did a very nice story on it about a week ago. She's going to have to resign in order to run full-time in a state like Texas. And Senator Cornyn has really been trying to push that back further and further and further and further, because a special election to fill her seat would be held like in, I don't know, March or something, if she were to resign any time between now and September, October. And frankly, a special election is only going to help the Democrats rather than having the election on the general election ballot next November, when it would certainly help the Republicans. And you got to look at a guy like the mayor of Houston, Bill White. If this scenario plays out, the Democrats could theoretically steal that seat, David.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Well, and that tells you, I mean, if the Republicans are in trouble in Texas, where can they be strong? Catherine, your thoughts on all this?
Well, I haven't spent as much time looking at it, but I just think it's funny that, you know, she's basically, I mean, it sounds like she's declaring that she's going to run for governor, but she's not going to resign until it's convenient. Just seems sort of... I mean, it seems like as soon as you decide you're going to run, you should resign and devote your time and allow someone else to step in as a senator, you know, to be elected as a senator. It just seems kind of contrary to the idea of serving the people. That's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a political move. And then, of course, I'm just wondering, how can Rick Perry use that appointment whenever it comes up to help him and needle at Kay Bailey Hutchinson? You have to suppose he wants to do that. So it will it'll be interesting to watch. Well, another Senate race that's certainly given a headache to John Cornyn is the Arkansas Senate race. I mean, this has to be one of the most vexing states, because if you look at it, it was one of four states the GOP actually gained ground in the presidential race. They expanded upon Bush's victory with McCain, yet Democrats in Arkansas hold the governorship and both Senate seats, and in recruiting, they're looking at two candidates, and one of them, and his last name escapes me, but I'll try to find it, Kim.
Kim Hendren.
Kim Hendren goes off and calls Chuck Schumer that Jew.
Yes, sir.
She really was more offensive than that. Catherine, what was your thoughts about Kim Hendren?
Well, I think that's crazy. I didn't read about it. But he really called Jesus. He just said that about Schumer?
He did.
That's
cute.
Yeah, it was. And there's a new blog that I actually found that about Arkansas politics. It actually is written by a conservative, but sometimes information is information. I don't know if it's the Tolbert Report or the Tolbert Report. We'll have to find that because it's spelled just like Colbert except with a T. They have pretty good coverage on it. They have the video of him doing it. They have reactions from, you know, the Rachel Maddow show and other places reacting to it. They're saying the NRCC has had to, or the NSRC, they've had to release steps on, like, how to handle diversity so you don't have your own macaca moment. Just an absolute mess. If you look at the fella, Tim, you've, I guess, seen the picture. He's not very photogenic.
Yes.
And so I don't really see this guy as going places. I mean, because if you think, even though Arkansas, I mean, it's the southern state, and I'm sure a lot of people, you know, maybe outside of our listening audience, have that stereotypical opinion of the backward South. But Arkansas, they've had elected Bill Clinton, Mike Huckabee, which is very, you know, good on TV, if you will, Blanche Lincoln Lambert, Mark Pryor. I mean, they don't really go for rubes in Arkansas.
No.
And so I don't see this guy as being a real good candidate anyway, although they have recruited another guy who was a Southern Baptist minister, now works for something called Safe Foods. He's their CEO, so he probably has a lot of business ties, but still has that cultural conservatism, and is closely aligned with Mike Huckabee. He's looking at the race, and I did see his picture, and he is more photogenic and probably has the good sense not to say that you. what do you think are the chances of the GOP with this candidate, Catherine?
Well, I mean, they can, you know, try to believe that this is past them, but, I mean, it sounds like that race is going to be up for grabs. I mean, I just don't see how when you – I don't know. I'm just shocked.
David, here's the thing about this. Blanche Lincoln, 37% of the voters say, yes, let's keep her in the Senate. 48% say, let's elect someone else. So how do the Republicans celebrate? Well, one of the leading candidates for this position goes off and says this. Oh, gee. I mean, it's just suicidal. When he was through making his speech, he did the unfortunate little deed of asking if there were any questions. Well, the room erupted on him. They went off on him in several different directions. And this was the leading candidate to take her on up until he did this. Here's my question. Why not Mike Huckabee himself?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Unless he's got other, you know, other things in mind, if you will.
He's not going to be the Republican nominee for president.
I don't disagree with you, but he might, so that's the problem. I mean,
he could win a U.S. Senate race in Arkansas. He was a very popular governor. What are they thinking?
Yeah, it's showing why. I mean, that has to be one of the most frustrating things for the Republicans is, I mean, this state politically had more people vote for John McCain than states like ours of Georgia, and they can't get anywhere, you know, on the state level.
They can't even recruit a decent candidate.
They couldn't even recruit a candidate against Mark Breyer.
God.
It's comical.
I'd be begging.
Well, it's another illustration of what kind of, you know, rough shape the GOP is in.
I mean, I'm going to go off geography today, but you know, I saw that the Obama administration's appointed John Huntsman, the governor of of Utah, to be the ambassador to China. I mean, and that was like one of the few candidates they were worried about in 2012. It's like, you know, the Obama administration's playing, you know, not chess. They're playing like Dungeons and Dragons with 20-sided dice. And the Republicans used to be playing checkers at Viking, probably times they were playing chess and we were playing checkers. But they're not playing checkers. They're playing like tic-tac-toe. Or they're flipping coins or rock, paper, scissors. I mean, they're not even sophisticated in what they're doing. It's just sad.
You know what, David, though? They can't come back and say, well, Obama did this just because of that, because Huntsman was ambassador to Singapore. He has an adopted Chinese daughter. He speaks fluent Mandarin Chinese.
He's qualified, I think, is what you're saying.
Yes, sir.
Well, I guess, Lynn, now let's bring it back to the South and the other state that was very, very newsworthy this week, or especially around Tuesday. We got two candidates in two different races. Charlie Crist finally went ahead and announced for U.S. Senate, and it was interesting what he said. He says, Florida's problems can't be solved in Tallahassee. They have to be solved with somebody working in Washington, which was, to me, totally out of the Republican playbook of states' rights and local control. Catherine, I hear you. Yeah, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, I think he's off the plantation. You know, he has a vision of the Republican Party that is different than the larger population, I think. I think it's good for the party. I think he's good for the party.
He's singing from a different page of the hymnal.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yep.
He's got a different play in mind, and I think it's probably very good for Florida. I'm a Democrat, but I have a lot of respect for him. I think he's much more thoughtful, and I think he really is interested in serving the people. I'm sure he's power hungry like them all, but I think he has a little bit better handle on all those things. So,
Catherine, that's probably what some of his Republican detractors would say about him. He's too popular with folks like us. Tim, what's your thought on Charlie Crist?
Well, you read my mind. There's a guy down there named Rubio that's also going to be running, and he's a favorite of the social conservatives. He's a club for growth type candidate, and we're going to see one of those defining moments in that primary. That's one of those, what shall we say, battle for the soul type moments. They've got a chance to elect Charlie Crist to the U.S. Senate. Are they going to pass it up with this purification thing they're going through, nominate Rubio, and lose the seat to the Democrats? That's what they're looking at.
Yeah, I mean, it will be interesting to see what they do, but I hear what you're saying. And then the other, I guess, shoe to drop right after that, when Charlie Crist said that he would run for Senate, Alex Sink, apparently the most popular statewide elected Democrat, the state comptroller, she announced that she would run for governor. Catherine, what do you think about her announcement? Tim, how about you?
Well, Alex Sink, incidentally, would be the first female governor of Florida if she's elected. She comes from a strong political family. I believe she is married to Bill McBride, who had ran for either the governor or senator down there. And she's only one of two statewide Democratic office holders in Florida. This would be quite a coup. She's probably the best person they could run, David, don't you think?
That's what I'm thinking, Catherine.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My phone died, so I missed the last few minutes.
Yeah, talk about Alex Sink deciding to run for governor. You know, it'll be interesting to see how that goes, but obviously it looked like from the speed in which she announced, had her website up, all those kind of things, you know, that she was ready to make this move as soon as Chris made this announcement.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think that's great. I mean, let's hope she can, you know, run a good campaign and win. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, I mean, it could be that while we might lose the Senate seat, we didn't lose anything, and then pick up the governor's seat or the governor's mansion, and you're still, you know, still 100% gain.
Yeah.
And then I guess the last state we can get to tonight would be North Carolina. North Carolina, Roy Cooper announced that he would not run, the Attorney General of North Carolina, and his polling, or actually polling that our friend Tom Jensen did, showed that he was a very formidable contender, and if you see how North Carolina's going, you just have to believe that'd be the truth. But then a fellow by the name of Cunningham, who's a former state senator who's in his 30s, served in Iraq, I believe left the state senate to serve in Iraq, is now looking at the race. Tim, your take on North Carolina.
Well, the downside of him running, David, is he don't really have a statewide office or something as what a launching pad to launch this bid from. Name recognition is going to be very tough with him. I really hate that Cooper dropped out of this race. He would have beaten Burr. He really must not have wanted to run because he had to see the same polls that we saw, right?
Yes, I mean, maybe his heart is, you know, looking at the governor's mansion, something like that.
Yeah, you have to think that.
But that hurt. That's one place the Democrats got hurt right there. I mean, I got to say what it is. That we got hurt right there when he decided not to run.
Yeah, but I mean, I still think North Carolina, if people get behind a different candidate, you know, they still got a good chance to, you know, win that thing. Just because the demographics in North Carolina are, you know, rapidly changing so fast. I mean, speaking back to one of our other topics, you know, we were talking about the 9th District of Georgia and how Republican it is, but geography-wise, I mean, isn't the district that Heath Shuler represents, isn't that so very similar to, you know, what we're seeing in the 9th District of Georgia? I mean,
yeah, but you know what Heath Shuler's district has that the 9th district does not have right now?
What does it
have? They don't have a Democrat like Heath Shuler.
Right.
Well, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, but even if they had a Democrat like Heath Shuler, I mean, even if, you know, Tim Couch or Keeley Smith, one of the other great quarterback flops, you know, Ryan Leaf came to run, I don't know that they could win in the 9th District of Georgia.
It would take a name like that to be competitive right now. I think the 9th District is like 83% white, very conservative, like she said. Catoosa County is absolutely the most Republican county in Georgia. Normally, they'll give a statewide Republican candidate 84% of the vote, and that county's got over 70,000 people in it. So I don't think she was exaggerating, to be honest with you.
Oh, no, I think she's absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, what's going on with North Carolina that's not going on here?
I think it's Heath Shuler.
Yeah.
obviously, he's bringing more to Democrats in North Carolina than he ever brought to the Redskins. But that's another topic.
I ain't touching that one.
Yes. Well, want to go ahead and finalize the show for tonight. Go ahead and let everybody know. Catherine, you won't be with us for 2 weeks. We're taking a well-deserved vacation.
That's right. I'm going to France.
Yep.
All you people who hate France, you can, like, you know, whatever.
Wow.
Well, there's nothing wrong with French Riviera and the Eiffel Tower and things like that on vacation.
That's right.
Just have all the freedom fries you want.
Oh, right, I will.
Is that term even said anymore? I don't even think the Republican National Committee, they say freedom fries anymore. That's just nonsense. And then, Tim, once again, congratulations to you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
we'll start calling you Gramps.
Yep, several times over, I guess, now. And then before I leave you out, I want to let y'all know, listen on Tuesday to Game On. We will be talking about Michael Steele's New Ideas to Reframe the Gay Marriage Debate. Should be an interesting show, but until next week.
Thank you.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.